Proverbs chapter 27. You don't know tomorrow. Don't brashly announce what you're going to do tomorrow. You don't know the first thing about tomorrow. Don't call attention to yourself. Let others do that for you. Carrying a log across your shoulders while you're hefting a boulder with your arms is nothing compared to the burden of putting up with a fool. We're blasted by anger and swamped by rage, but who can survive jealousy? A spoken reprimand is better than approval that's never expressed. The wounds from a lover are worth it. Kisses from an enemy do you in. When you've stuffed yourself, you refuse dessert. When you're starved, you could eat a horse. People who won't settle down, wandering hither and yon, are like restless birds flitting to and fro. Just as lotions and fragrance give sensual delight, a sweet friendship refreshes the soul. Don't leave your friends or your parents' friends and run home to your family when things get rough. Better a nearby friend than a distant family. Become wise, dear child, and make me happy. Then nothing the world throws my way will upset me. A prudent person sees trouble coming and ducks. A simpleton walks in blindly and is clobbered. Hold tight to collateral on any loan to a stranger. Be wary of accepting what a transient has pawned. If you wake your friend in the early morning by shouting, "Rise and shine," it will sound to him more like a curse than a blessing. A nagging spouse is like the drip, drip, drip of a leaky faucet. You can't turn it off and you can't get away from it. Your face mirrors your heart. You use steel to sharpen steel, and one friend sharpens another. If you care for your orchard, you'll enjoy its fruit. If you honour your boss, you'll be honoured. Just as water mirrors your face, so your face mirrors your heart. Hell has a voracious appetite, and lust just never quits. The purity of silver and gold is tested by putting them in the fire. The purity of human hearts is tested by giving them a little fame. Pound on a fool all you like, you can't pound out foolishness. Know your sheep by name, carefully attend to your flocks. Don't take them for granted, possessions don't last forever, you know. And then, when the crops are in and the harvest is stored in the barns, you can knit sweaters from the lamb's wool and sell your goats for a profit. There will be plenty of milk and meat to last your family through the winter.
So Proverbs 27. First point really is just to learn, all of us, to live a day at a time. Don't brashly announce what you're going to do tomorrow. You don't know the first thing about tomorrow. And in what's known as the Sermon on the Mount and the great teachings of Jesus. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And the Message translation says this: give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help. You deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. And it's difficult, isn't it, to be living, just to be living in the day. Proverbs already told us it's okay to plan. We can plan ahead, but there's no need to worry ahead. And Paul tells us that God's grace is sufficient. And God's blessing and God's grace is what we need for today. And then going back to the Old Testament and the story of the manna from heaven, there's a principle there of knowing God's provision for each single day. And so don't worry about tomorrow. If tomorrow arrives, God's provision will arrive with it, and God will give us the strength and the courage to face whatever we have to face. But today is today, and we've only been given this day that we know of to live. And so we live that out for God in the best way possible, knowing his peace, knowing his strength, knowing his provision. And I think for us as Christians, the challenge of living or trying to live a day at a time is a very real one. And I think because the pace of life has picked up so much, I say that, I mean, apart from kind of lockdown, you know, the pace of life before lockdown was just absolutely kind of crazy. And we almost kind of got into that perpetual motion, not just physically, but in our minds, thinking ahead, worrying ahead, looking at the problems, instead of trying to live in the now and to live in the current day with the blessing and the purpose of God in our hearts and leading us forward hour by hour through each day. God will provide what we need today, because he, as the song tells us, he is a faithful God and his provision is ever true. And then this proverb again highlights the importance of friendship. And it says in verse 5, a spoken reprimand is better than approval that's never expressed. And as friends, we can speak the truth into one another's lives. There's a story in the Old Testament in 2 Samuel chapter 12. And sadly, David has sinned. He's committed adultery and he's committed murder. And he is unaware, in one sense, of the sins that he has committed. And the prophet Nathan comes and tells him a story of this incredibly rich farmer who wanted to throw a big party, but he didn't want to use his sheep or his cows to supply the food. And so there was a very poor family that just kind of lived from hand to mouth, just about surviving. And so he kind of got the cattle and the sheep from this poor farmer. And as Nathan is telling David the story, David's becoming enraged. He's becoming quite angry to the point where he says, "Tell me who this farmer is and I'll sort him out." He's so moved by the story. And then kind of Nathan, for me, takes his life in his hands, because this is King David, who's already had people killed. And Nathan looks at David in the eye and says, "David, you are the man. You are the rich farmer." And then the Spirit kind of convicted David of the sin that he had committed, and he was restored back to God. But it took that friendship, it took that bravery of Nathan to actually come to David and say, "David, you have sinned, you have done wrong." And to have that type of friendship where we challenge one another correctly, not in the sense of trying to prove that we are better than somebody else or trying to show that we are more holy. It's because we love somebody and we care for somebody and we recognize that if they've done something wrong, if they are sin, that affects their spiritual walk with God. And the best thing that we want for our friend is for them to become closer to God. So if there's anything hindering that walk of our friend with God, we need to be able, like Nathan, to say, "You are the man," but it takes courage. Friends speak the truth to one another. And this beautiful verse in verse 9 where it says, "Friendship refreshes the soul." Refreshes the soul. I don't know where you've ever been for a kind of a long walk in the sun. Sean and myself have made the mistake in one or two hot summers where we went for a walk, not realizing how long the walk was, and we didn't take any water with us. And you do get to that point with, I just need to be refreshed. I need that water. And true friendship not only speaks the truth and challenges us, true friendship refreshes the soul. We're tired, almost exhausted, maybe with the battles that we are facing. That true friend by our side just refreshes us deep within, freshes our soul. And it goes on to say in verse 10, stay close to your friends. Stay close to your friends. We need to keep our friends close to us. And again, in verse 17, there it says, you use steel to sharpen steel, and one friend sharpens another. One friend sharpens another. Jesus said to his disciples, "I no longer call you servants. I call you friends." Jesus called his disciples friends, and Jesus certainly challenged his disciples. On one occasion, they were having a bit of a discussion as to which one of them was the most important, and Jesus kind of came in with a question, what are you talking about? He knew what they were talking about, but he was just challenging them. He was just challenging them. That friendship, the challenge is not to knock down, as I said, the challenge is to build up. I had a friend of mine, and we used to play squash together, and he was much, much better than me. And the first game of squash that we played, he hardly played, and I didn't know, because I didn't know him that well to start with. And he kind of, he took it easy on me, and I felt myself that I was doing really, really good. And then the second game, he said, I play properly now. And it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. But he would push me. He would push me to my limits. He would literally physically exhaust me. Halfway through some of the games, he would stop me and tell me my mistakes. And if you know me, I don't like having my mistakes being pointed out. But he would stop and say, Robert, if you hold the racket this way, I'm thinking, I know how to hold a racket. He said, no, you're not holding the racket correctly. And then he said, oh, look, if you position yourself here and not there. And I'm thinking, what's going on? But he did that because he knew that I enjoyed squash and he wanted me to improve my game, which it did do. But we've got to get over that pride. We've got to get over that pride. But that friendship, that challenge of iron sharpening iron for the right reason. So, you know, when we're not doing the things that we should be doing or saying things in a manner that we shouldn't be saying, to have a friend that would say to us, look, that was a bit, do you think that was a bit harsh? Do you think you're a bit over the top there? Or do you think this or do you think that? And not to be offended by that, but to receive that challenge, because you know the friend loves us and the friend just wants the best for us. Jesus challenged his disciples. He challenged his friends because he knew that the best for them was them to walk closer to himself and closer to God. And then just to kind of finish this morning, we have this phrase, or we describe some people who, as people who wear their hearts on their sleeve. We use the phrase, you wear your heart on your sleeve. In a casual way, to say that we are showing our intimate emotions in an honest and open manner. I didn't realize where this phrase came from. You might remember I asked you the other day if you knew the phrase, the origin of the phrase, writer's rain, and you couldn't tell me that. I've muted you all. But can you tell me where this phrase comes from, your heart, when your heart and your sleeve? Can you wave to me if you know it? You don't know, do you? So I'm going to enlighten you this morning. So I'm going to give you some culture as well this morning. So it comes, in fact, it comes from it's in one of the plays by William Shakespeare. But it's likely that the phrase, wear your heart on your sleeve, comes from the medieval jousts, where a sleeve referred to a piece of the armor which covered the protected the arm. And the knights would often wear a lady's token around their sleeve or armor. So if there's a young lady that liked this particular knight or person that was in this battle, she would give him the handkerchief, and on the arm that he would take the joust with, he would wrap that handkerchief around that, wearing the emotion, running the lady's feelings on his sleeve. So you've learned something this morning, haven't you? Look at that. But Proverbs says, we wear our hearts on our face. We wear our hearts on our face. Verse 19, just as water mirrors your face, so your face mirrors your heart. We read these words in the New Testament. Whenever, though they turn their face to God, as Moses did, God removes the veil, and there they are face to face. They suddenly recognize that God is a living, personal presence, not a piece of chiseled stone. And when God is personally present, a living spirit, the old constricting laws is recognized as obsolete. We're free of it all of us. Nothing between us and God. Our faces shining with the brightness of his face. And so we are transfigured, much like the Messiah, our lives gradually becoming brighter and more beautiful as God enters our lives and we become like him. Our faces shining with the brightness of his face. And so we are transfigured much more, much like the Messiah, our lives gradually becoming brighter and brighter as God enters our lives and we become like him. So let's not worry about tomorrow or next week or next month. Let's thank God for the friendships that we have. And let's pray that today our faces will become brighter and brighter with the glory and the presence of his face. Just as water mirrors your face, so your face mirrors your heart.